This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program. We'd like to hear from you if you're so inclined. 877-217-5757 is your number. And talk@talklouisiana.org is our email. We begin with Rebecca Christofferson. Dr. Christofferson teaches pathobiological sciences within LSU's veterinary medicine program. She has been featured in many places over the last few weeks, including the BBC, and we're glad to have her with us on Talk Louisiana. She has a long history at Louisiana State University, starting with being in the Tiger Band back in the year of 1998 when she enrolled as an undergraduate. She was in the Tiger Band when the head coaches of the Fighting Tigers were Jerry DiNardo and a fellow named Nick Saban. And all these years later, she's here to talk with us about what is happening with COVID-19. The president says we're in a good spot, but there's a surge in cases seen statewide and nationwide. Today's Baton Rouge Advocate, Jeff Adelson, has the front page story saying that Louisiana now has a faster growing rate of COVID-19 than all but four states. So something has gone awry, and Dr. Christofferson, I'm sure you have some ideas on what is happening with more people resuming their lives, and as a result, more people being in contact with those who are infected, and where do we go? What's going to happen with all this?
Yeah, so thanks for having me. Transmission of these types of viruses, it's actually pretty simple. It's contact. The virus can't get into another susceptible person unless there's contact. Now, all of the factors that go into this quote-unquote simple thing, contact, is actually a complex process, right? But we're learning that as people reopen, as states reopen and people contact more and more, we're learning just how efficient the transmission is. And that's what we're seeing right now. It's just the consequences of there being more contact among more people and more susceptible people coming into contact with a virus that's really good at its transmission.
When you say contact, are we talking primarily people who are touching each other or maybe being in close proximity to somebody who's talking or singing or whatever who has it, or is it possible to get it from a surface?
Right. So the data suggests right now that all of those things are possible. I think what's coming out is that fomite transmission, which is the transmission from inanimate objects such as surfaces, et cetera, is not quite as a contributing factor as being in close proximity. The face mask thing is really sort of coming out of the data that's showing that air droplets or contact through just close proximity. It's not necessarily you have to touch that person, but it's really just the ability of the virus to contact you is really what's the key there. So close proximity, the droplets from when you speak or when you sing or when you, yell or whatever, those are the types of contacts that are, we think at this point, driving the transmission.
The latest from the Centers for Disease Control has the death rate in the United States 134,027 from COVID-19. The model shown that we're most likely, unfortunately, to get beyond 200,000, perhaps as soon as October, but certainly by the end of the year, and it could be worse. There could be 250,000 Americans dead from this by the end of the year, and then we deal with next year. Is anything possible to thwart this short of a vaccine?
I think if we can really get a handle on physical distancing and mask compliance, that will help. We're not going to stop transmission without some sort of like hard stop vaccine that really is really, really, really good at just protecting and invoking an immune response that makes people unavailable for infection. So I think, though, that we can slow it down if we get really good and we have a really compliant, altruistic community that's looking out for neighbors by physically distancing, by wearing the mask, and just really looking out for their neighbors.
Dr. Rebecca Christofferson is with us from the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine. Today, President Trump has continued his demand that schools reopen physically in the fall, pressing his drive to get the country moving again as the coronavirus pandemic surges through much of the United States. And we have college campuses that are dealing with this as well. What do you think will happen at LSU, for example?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that there's a lot of discussion across campuses across the United States. It's not, you know, it's not an opening yes, no. There's a whole spectrum of possibilities for some sort of hybrid opening or, you know, limited number of people on campus. So I'm not really sure what's the decisions being made at LSU right now. I think, you know, each campus has to take into consideration what's going on in their community. A small liberal arts community or a liberal arts campus that's isolated is not going to have the same sorts of, you know, factors that, you know, a campus in the middle of New York City is going to have, or even, you know, LSU campus in Baton Rouge. So it's going to be really site specific, and it's going to have, you know, a lot of creative thought. And I think, you know, campuses all across the company, all across the country are starting to really kind of look at their individual situations and take into account all the data that they have at their fingertips to make those decisions.
LSU is right now scheduled to open its football season in 59 nights at Tiger Stadium with 102,321 patrons in attendance. Will that happen?
Oh, that's way above my pay grade, Jim.
Should it happen? You see,
happen.
What?
I think, again, that's going to be a decision based on what's the possibility. What does the reopening plan look like? You know, there's not a yes, no answer. There's a million possibilities between, you know, the zero and the one that could shape what opening might look like. And I'm not privy to any of the details of what that might be.
Okay. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, and talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And Dr. Rebecca Christofferson from the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine is an expert on infectious diseases, and this is one that is one for the ages. A pandemic is affecting the world, and it has affected the economy, and we don't know where it is going. And a question that was bound to come up, this from Brendan in Gonzales, asking, what is the origin? Do we really know how this started?
We can make a best guess based on, you know, the data. And as we have more and more data coming out, our guesses will get more and more, you know, to the point. All indications are that it came out of what we call a zoonotic cycle, which is that this virus was probably circulating among animals, you know, being probably not that harmful. So a virus doesn't really want to kill its host. It wants to perpetuate. That's all it wants to do. It wants to get from one host to another. And so killing things is not really in its best interest. So it was probably maintained in a zoonotic cycle where it just circulated among animals. And at some point, and, you know, there's speculation about wet markets, there's speculation about how it could have come out of the zoonotic cycle into the human population. But at some point, that's what happened. And it got to where it could jump from its initial human host to another human host, and it turns out that it's really good at that. And so that's really the data that we have right now.
Hmm. Well, there, of course, there is some speculation at the highest levels of our government that this was hatched in some sort of laboratory in China. Is that possible, or is that something that is just hocus pocus?
I don't think that's the case here. I mean, there are a lot of people who have looked at the very molecules that make up the genetic information of this virus. And all indication is that it came from a natural cycle. Is it possible? It's just very, very unlikely. I don't think anyone in science is really prescribing to that theory.
But it's become a political thing, and we are in an election year. And sometimes decisions are different in election years than they would be at other times. What do you think the best case scenario would be right now, Dr. Christofferson? Should we go back to phase one? Should we continue as we are with these cases spiking? What can we do to mitigate this?
So, you know, this has been an issue for people who have been responding to the pandemic like me. And it's like there's a biological process in this whole milieu of pandemic response that is really one part of the whole thing. So biologically, the best thing to do would be to wall it off, let it die out, be done. But we don't live in a vacuum of biology. We have sociology, we have economics, people's livelihoods, their mental health, their ability to pay their bills and feed their children. These are not trivial or unimportant things. And so we're trying, I think we're seeing that policymakers are really in a hard place where they have to weigh all of these different factors to try to figure out what's the next best thing. And if I had the answer, I would be making a lot more, more money, and I could retire, right? So there is no simple answer. And it's really, really a rock and a hard place for decision makers. Whether or not we should go back to phase one or, you know, stay in phase two is really, it's such a complex issue. I think what we need to do is really instill in our community the idea of individual contribution to.
All right, we're going to pause for a moment and return in 90 seconds with more from Dr. Christofferson. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana, another segment with Dr. Rebecca Christofferson from the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine. We're going to try to cover as much ground as we can in this segment with her, and hopefully we'll talk with her again soon. She is an authority on infectious diseases, and we have a pandemic like we have not seen in this country, in this world, since 1918. And the Spanish flu of 1918 killed 675,000 Americans, and this time around, over 134,000 Americans are dead from coronavirus, and we know that that number is going to explode. 877-217-5757. Let's go to Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, you're on the air with Dr. Christofferson.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Christofferson. I'd like to know why we're just all wringing our hands. Why doctors won't say the critically important thing that we all need to strengthen our immune systems to, in order to either prevent or to fight the virus. And we need vitamin therapy. There have been many, many studies that show the effectiveness of vitamin D and vitamin C, but nobody talks about that.
All right. What about Ellen's statement?
So I have to say that, first off, I am not a physician. So I, when it comes to clinical medicine, that is way outside my wheelhouse. And so I can't speak to treatments or drug therapies. I think everyone having a healthy lifestyle is never a bad thing. I think what we're seeing is that comorbidities do suggest that people who have, maybe more access to healthier lifestyles maybe are doing better. But again, I would say that is a question better left for a physician.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org to get in under the wire with Dr. Rebecca Christofferson. Tom on Bluebonnet asks about these antibody tests. Are they effective?
So an antibody test, effective as in accurate?
Yes.
There's some question as to how accurate they are. It depends on which test. I know the CDC put out a statement not long ago saying that there were some tests that had up to 50%. I can't remember if it's false positive or false negative rates. So the antibody test, the caveat there is that we still are not sure what antibody positive means. We don't know as a scientific community, because let me remind everybody, there are people who study HIV or other viruses, or I've studied dengue virus for over 10 years. We study viruses all the time because we, you know, it's the dangling carrot theory of science. We never quite get to the answer. There's always just more questions. We've known about this virus for months. And so while the progress being made is exponentially growing, we're still learning. And so the antibodies indicate that maybe you were exposed, maybe you were infected, but we don't know if that means you're protected. And so until we have a definitive, you know, very rigorous study that shows that, I always urge people to take those results with a grain of salt anyway.
Dr. Christofferson, Kevin Berry asks, how true is it that it's difficult to develop a vaccine for corona-type viruses?
So I don't think the difficulty is necessarily in developing the vaccine itself. There's difficult, I mean, not specific to coronaviruses. Vaccine development is very complicated. You have to show safety in one or two animal models. You have to show non-toxicity of whatever you're putting in the vaccine. You have to show that it is safe and that there are not adverse effects. And you have to do all of this in a very, very detailed and rigorous way. And so I know that there's a lot of impatience for a vaccine. I mean, I'm ready to get off this crazy COVID train as well. So I'm rooting for all of the vaccines. But vaccine development is the one place where I am wary about cutting too much red tape, because you can have vaccines that potentially are not as effective. And so then you're giving people a false sense of security. So we need to really kind of temper our expectations that let's cut through the red tape, but let's do it in a safe way and understand that that's going to take time.
Steve in Lafayette says, what is wrong with a planned exposure of the population to attempt to obtain herd immunity? Is that doable or is that impossible?
So, again, it goes back to a couple of things. One is that we don't know if the antibodies, if you're exposed, you can never get it again. We just don't know that. So if you expose people, maybe they can't get it again. That would be the best case scenario. Maybe they're protected from disease. Maybe that's enough. Or maybe it doesn't do anything. We just don't know yet. Sweden tried that. And if you go and look at what Sweden's going through, I don't think that they're particularly recommending that for other countries to follow. They didn't do anything. They were going to try and reach herd immunity. They haven't. Herd immunity takes conservatively 40% of the population, and that's very conservative, to be exposed and immune. Again, we don't know if immunity is a thing yet. Also, in Stockholm, for example, I don't think they reached anywhere near that. In Spain, where they had a very fulminant outbreak, there was a paper just published or a study just published in The Lancet. Spain has not reached anywhere near what they need to be herd for herd immunity either. So controlled exposure, that is a really risky dice to roll because people will die.
All right. David in Atlanta. David, you're on the air with Professor Christofferson from the LSU Veterinary School. Hi, David.
Oh, good morning. Regeneron announced the other day they have a possible medication that's a cure, a treatment, and a possible preventive for the coronavirus. What is the difference between preventing and a vaccine? They said it wasn't a vaccine. And, doctor, what company do you think is the closest to possibly developing a vaccine?
All right. What about these companies that are scrambling, obviously, all over the globe to try to find a vaccine or something that will at least thwart the spread of this? What about that? And is there anything that you know of that's in the offing, as Billy Tozan said a few weeks ago on this show, that we would have a vaccine by September? What do you think?
So I don't really, I don't know about this drug, so I can't speak to this particular drug. I haven't seen that. But as far as vaccine companies, I know a lot of companies are working on it, but a lot of academic institutions are. LSU Vet School, for example, I know they're working with, I think, Tulane Non-Human Primate Center to look at a vaccine. So there's a whole spectrum of people who are working tirelessly and really long hours and really putting in all of they got to get a vaccine out. I think September is very, very optimistic and probably unrealistic. I don't know that there is, I think there was one that was going to a clinical trial that would, that was promising, but again, clinical trials take months. And so I think September is probably unrealistic. Unfortunately, I would be thrilled if that were the case.
But not likely. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on with Dr. Christofferson.
Good morning. I'd recommend that you take advantage of the state's program for free testing. We went yesterday. It was at Cortana Mall. It was very well run. And I think that's something we could all do to help get the research going. Thank you.
How readily available is testing, and as Phil said, free testing in our community right now?
I'm sorry, you cut. What was the question?
The question, he said he got tested for free yesterday at Cortana Mall. He said it went well. Is that readily available?
As far as I know, the federal HHS in Texas, Louisiana, and Florida, because we were having these surges, has worked with the state to put out these free testing sites, and I think Alex Box Stadium was one. I know Cortana Mall was one. Anytime we can get more opportunity to find possibly asymptomatic or subclinical people who don't think that they're that sick but are positive, and isolate those people, you know, inform them of their test result, isolate those people, and isolate their contacts. Anytime we can do that, we will interrupt transmission, and that's never a bad thing. So I think that is a very important part of the public health response, and I do encourage it's a great source of data that's needed to go forward.
Well, Dr. Christofferson, thank you for being with us today. We'll be calling again soon. Congratulations on your success and the good work you're doing at the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine.
Thank y'all for having me.
And former Tiger Band member, Rebecca Christofferson. 877-217-5757 is always your Talk Louisiana number, and we'll return with Councilwoman Shauna Banks after the news.